Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy Friday. Sun is out. Welcome back. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. The guy's got to have his Valentine's Day off. He loves it that much. Say what you want. Really, say what you want. On the Wester hotline now is Steve Palazzolo. Always happy to have Steve on with Pro Football Focus. Steve, last time you were on, we talked a little bit about your baseball career. Is that common? I do see it on Twitter right at the top in that little bio section. So do you get a lot of questions about pitching in the Giants organization a decade or so ago?
Yeah, I do, especially if I do Bay Area radio. Always, fun to discuss. And, when minor league baseball salary structure comes up or various things like that, I'm always quick to chime in on stuff like that. So,
how about when there's a massive scandal in the sport and everybody's talking about whether one team, I think we know that one team cheated like that. Steve, I am blown away by how the other players are reacting. We get very little of that in sports, that sort of honesty and anger. But listening to Cody Bellinger and Aroldis Chapman and Strasburg, like, holy cow. And these guys apparently, too, are not afraid of some sort of similar implications being made about them or their teams. Like, it is just totally everybody against the Astros right now.
Yeah, so baseball is interesting because I didn't realize this until I got out of the game and had to work a quote-unquote real job analyzing football. I've still not worked a real job, but working with non-baseball players, when you're in baseball, it is this, you're with everybody for 200 straight days. There's 10 off days during the season, and a lot of people are just like looking. It's like social media. Everybody's kind of like looking for something to be offended by. So I think baseball players by nature are just like looking, like really like being offended. And then when you have a big scandal like this, I mean, you guys get offended when, you watch the home run for too long. And then I got to throw at you and these unwritten rules, which again, I was, I did that when I played, I thought like that. And then when I stepped away from the game, I'm like, that's pretty stupid the way baseball players think and look to be offended and look to get mad at each other for various things. So my point is, a scandal like this, that's easily going to trigger everybody else around the league because that's your career. That's, pitchers giving up home runs. That's a lot of money left on the table. So I'm not really surprised that those are the angry reactions.
Interesting. Do you expect during the season for there to be, brawls? Like a physical, some sort of retaliation? What do you think we might get, at least at the beginning of the season, perhaps?
Yeah, I think early on you might just – I hope it doesn't become a full season thing. I think if people are really upset about it, you're going to see pitchers get, one brushback pitch, maybe one per player, whatever it is, one per team. Like, here's our warning, right? We're upset about this. But again, as I've stepped away from the game and aged and matured, I think the whole concept of throwing a baseball at someone else because you're upset at them is just silly and ludicrous and just ridiculous. It really is. It's a kid's game. And that's a kid's way of reacting, but I do think that's probably what you're going to see, probably early in the season as people try to make their point. Hey, we're upset with what you guys did.
Yeah, and I appreciate that point and agree with it. Like, I'm not a fistic justice guy either, but players are going to want to think that they're owed something, and they might actually be owed something in certain cases. But does that really settle it? I don't know. I get it. Steve Palazzolo of Pro Football Focus. All right, so. Checking your Twitter, as I often do, I know most recently you've tweeted about Joe Burrow a little bit. Just so that I know as we start to talk here, where is more of your focus? Like, are you into the draft more right now? I mean, the free agency thing at quarterback could get really wild, and so I'm excited about that, and that's first. What are you thinking about more often?
Yeah, everything, really. I mean, I'm currently behind the scenes working on a product for our NFL team customers that's really focused around team building and essentially taking our information, which every team, they're already clients, but I'm trying to help take it to the next level for them and give them kind of surface all of our insights when it comes to team building and player evaluation and all that fun stuff, player valuation, how much these guys are worth. So all of it's on the table for me at this point, free agency, cover, thinking about the draft, not as deep as I have before, but, you know, hitting on some of the top guys at this point. So to me, it's just team building season, and I think this is the most fascinating time of the year because there's so many decisions to be made between free agency, releases, trades, and then eventually the draft. So I think it's more just all-encompassing team-building season right now.
I see. Well, I'm curious about what you're working on. What maybe new what kind of growth areas are there in how Pro Football Focus is able to evaluate players? Where is this section or this portion of football analytics like really growing? And maybe you could talk about that a little.
Yeah, so again, we have all 32 NFL teams as clients, and they get our massive database, and they implement it into their weekly processes when they're preparing for teams, and then also in the offseason when they're, you know, making decisions on players. I'm hoping to definitely take that to the next level, and you know, we started out as just player grades and evaluating every single snap, but we've got our entire research and development team, really smart guys, math guys who know football, played football, even some of them. And just putting values to that. So if a quarterback has a similar grade as, say, a guard in the PFF system, obviously the quarterback's more valuable, but by how much? And how do you compare players across positions when it comes to just trying to achieve more wins as a team using, you know, baseball's wins above replacement metric? We have a football version of that that we've been developing. And then, you know, putting a price tag on that. How much should you pay the top guard in the league versus, say, the top defensive tackle versus, say, the top quarterback? So those are all the questions we're hoping to answer, trying to answer, and continue to just add data to, and you know, surface that stuff for our NFL team clients, so hopefully they can, you know, further, you know, put that into their decision making process.
Is it getting easier to measure players' play, whether that's just through technology or some access that you gain? Is it getting easier to be able to tell play to play how well guys are doing? I mean, however that might manifest.
I don't know that it's becoming easier. I think the PFF system, which started, you know, over 10 years ago, was, you know, hey, we're gonna watch every player on every play and put what people would call a subjective grade, but it, like, it's a grade based off of a rubric. So we're all seeing the game through the same eyes, and it's going to be consistent from 2006 when we started through 2019. So that level of consistency and detail, it's not necessarily easy to achieve. I guess the easier thing is taking stuff like next-gen stats and being able to, you know, take a wide sample and at least put stats to new stats to the players. But I think the idea of saying how well did this guy play football still takes the time and effort that we put in, which is watching every single snap at both the NFL and FBS level, and then taking all that data, giving it to our smartest guys and saying, okay, make sense of this. How do we you know, use this a little bit more? And the thing that we found is, you know, some positions are easier, you know, to project. You know, defensive line, our stuff's really consistent year to year. It's easier to project, say, defensive linemen versus, say, linebackers or safeties or whatever it might be. So that's the type of stuff that we're sorting through right now, is which pieces of our information are most valuable moving forward.
Okay. Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, at PFF _ Steve. Let's talk about the free agency aspect of this then. Buffalo does not seem, I mean, I think maybe we all do, like, not a player in this, maybe at backup at some point along the way here, but a lot of this action that we might see, will happen apart from us, of course. How much do you expect? And does Tom Brady really represent the tipping point in this? Like, how much can he affect if he ends up leaving the Patriots?
He is a massive domino because, yeah, the Patriots then have to figure out what they're going to do. And I don't think anybody really has a read or a gauge on what Brady wants to do or how much the Patriots want him back. If it's the true Patriots way, they put a number on it and they say, here, you're worth X. And, you know, if X isn't good enough for Brady, perhaps he goes and looks elsewhere. I think Brady at this point, though, isn't looking for a number so much as he's just looking for support and a better supporting cast than he had last year. I think he spent his whole career elevating his supporting cast, and at 43 years old, it's a lot more difficult to do at this point, so he does need better playmakers to throw to. But yeah, he is the big domino, and I don't have a feel for whether or not he's going to look at an Indianapolis or Chicago or, you know, the Chargers or wherever it might be and actually explore and see. I mean, my feeling is that he ends up back in New England just because the familiarity does help. But I think that would come from New England saying, look, we're gonna get two or three guys for you to throw to and build from there. But, yeah, the quarterback dominoes are going to be fascinating. Brady, Jameis Winston, you know, Ryan Tannehill likely going back to Tennessee, but you still have to see that. I mean, there's a lot.
Right.
Phillip Rivers, absolutely on the market. There's a lot that has to happen.
I mean, New England should probably add those other players either way, right?
No matter what. Right.
Yeah, the way the season played out for them. What would you say, if you were a Bills fan, you would want? Because I think I'm really torn on that. Like, I mean, Brady is going to be 43, and he's in decline. I mean, that's undeniable, I think. But I don't know. Like, he's been such an assassin against them, and it might feel like I just want to take my chances with someone else. What should Patriots opponents want to see happen?
I think the AFC East would be happy to see Brady go. I mean, I think he has taken a step back from a, you know, on-field play standpoint the last couple of years, but I still think he's the best quarterback in the AFC East. I mean, I think he's more than capable of going out there and putting up a big season if you do have the right supporting cast around him. So I'm sure Bills, Jets, Dolphins fans are all ready for him to move on and, you know, see a fresh new world. I'm sure a lot of NFL fans are just curious to see what happens if Brady moves on and, you know, can Belichick do anything without him? Can Brady do anything without Belichick? I mean, we've been trying to answer that question for a while. I don't know if you get a great answer. He's 43. I don't know what the expectation should be, but I think people are ready to see something new.
Yeah, I'm totally one of those fans for sure. I'm just curious to see what it would look like. You mentioned Jameis Winston. The reports on Tampa, there was one the other day that we were kind of laughing about here, Steve, where it was, no, Tampa really would be interested in Phillip Rivers and Brady and Breeze and Bridgewater and Justin Herbert. Like, where does that leave Winston? Are you assuming he'll be out there?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Tampa Bay should give it a shot as far as franchising Jameis. I think I've always been a Jameis believer in that he reminds me of the one-off breakout seasons that, say, Carson Palmer had in 2015, even Cam Newton, that random MVP season that he had. Cam didn't play like that the rest of his career. He had one incredible season. Jameis's profile is similar to that. He's so aggressive. He gives his playmakers chances to make plays. There'll be one year where all those passes to linebackers either get dropped or he has some turnover luck and the stats look great and that aggressive style will pay off. So I think it's always worth it. Like, it might be worth one more shot from Tampa Bay just to see if you can get that out of them. But it is tough to lock Jameis up long term. I do think they'll be looking. The one thing that would make you say, hey, bring him back is second year in Bruce Arians' system. Man, Bruce Arians has done a really nice job of developing quarterbacks. And he's the one who extracted that career year out of Carson Palmer and has developed guys like Ben Roethlisberger and started the development to Andrew Luck. So there's something to maybe like seeing that through with Jameis, but there are so many QBs on the market, I'm sure Tampa Bay is going to be exploring all options.
Yeah, right. And they have the skill players that, like, the Patriots don't. They have the weapons, right? It sounds to me like more and more people are expecting Phillip Rivers to go to Indianapolis. Do you also expect that?
Yeah, so Indianapolis, I've been, you know, saying this for a while. I really think that the indoor conditions are just an underrated aspect of football. And that's not to take anything away from Peyton Manning and his years in Indianapolis. He's great. Drew Brees, his years with the Saints. But there's something to having eight or more indoor games per season. And I think that you don't have to deal with the Buffalo weather, the New England weather, whatever it might be. It's good for your passing stats. It's good for the passing game. Passing stats are – the passer rating is like 6 points higher. It's 6 points higher in a dome. So I think – when you have a guy like Indianapolis is attractive just for that right off the bat. And then when you have a guy like Phillip Rivers who does, you know, throw some ducks here and there and has some times where the arm looks like it's, you know, disappearing, that could help prolong his career. So I think Indianapolis is attractive because they've built a solid foundation. They have a lot of cap space. They got the indoors. The AFC South is always just wide open. And I think it's a really attractive spot for a guy like a Phillip Rivers, and I think that's attractive for the Colts as well to bring him in because I still think he has enough left, to win.
What would you say, if that happens, to Indy's chances or possibly being even a favorite? Like, would you consider a Rivers-led Colts team? We don't know the draft and the rest of free agency, of course, but like they got a lot of credit for their roster. before Andrew Luck went away. Like, that was a team right. that was like everybody's maybe the hottest non-Patriots or Saints Super Bowl pick last year. Are they still that? Is that right? And would Rivers get them back near that status?
Yeah, I think they'd be right up there. I mean, Houston, they have Deshaun Watson, which will, you know, that's the advantage right now. They've got the best quarterback in the division, even though Ryan Tannehill did outplay him this year. But Watson's the best quarterback that you can bank on year to year, but the Texans have so many holes and they don't have the draft capital to like to plug them right now. So they need to be really good this offseason. Tennessee, it's going to be really tough to duplicate the Ryan Tannehill magic. They've been the team that just has that really solid 8-8, 9-7 type of roster, and then all of a sudden Tannehill has a career year, and it's like, hey, they're in the AFC Championship. That's going to be tough to duplicate. And Jacksonville's still trying to find their way when it comes to Gardner Minshew, Nick Foles, who's the actual guy. They've got a lot, you know, pieces to add there. I think that puts Indianapolis, if they had a Rivers-level quarterback, it puts them in the driver's seat in the AFC South, and yeah, they'd be a tough team to beat, assuming that Rivers doesn't just, you know, fall off the cliff that everybody expects 38, 39, 40-year-old quarterbacks to fall off of.
Yeah. You know, the Bills will have, like any team, I mean, their own challenges trying to climb in the AFC. They did a good job this year, of course, getting to 10-6 and the playoffs. You're mentioning Houston, and we're talking Indy, and then there's, of course, the Super Bowl champions and the team that was the best team in the regular season, and there's the Patriots. And maybe even like bounce back from Cleveland or Pittsburgh, or I don't know. Like, that's like half the conference. How optimistic are you for Buffalo?
So I'm not terribly optimistic. I mean, man, Bills Mafia is all over us lately.
Here we go, right? Here we go.
Right. This is the fun part. So I would say I am incredibly impressed by the job that Sean McDermott's done, by everything that's happened there as far as the way the defense has played the last 3 years. I don't think that they have the best, most talented roster, but they've gotten the most out of them. I'm so impressed with the way they run their coverage scheme and the way they've given Tom Brady and the New England Patriots a lot of, you know, they've made it difficult on them, even when they were at their best in 2017. So very impressed with what they've done there. I just think Josh Allen needs to take a bigger step forward, I think, maybe than Bills fans would have you believe. They won a lot of games this year. I still think he left a lot of plays on the table. He had a lot of turnover luck. I was very impressed with Allen's development at the short and intermediate ranges. I thought his accuracy did improve there, but he still had the highest percentage of negatively graded throws in our system, meaning he's missing more throws than other quarterbacks, and those are usually the plays that stay relatively consistent year to year. It's very similar to Mitch Trubisky last year, where we were saying, look, he had some good stats. They won a lot of games, but you can't keep this level of winning if you're the Bears if Trubisky plays at the same level. Mm-hmm. This year he kind of played at the same level and the stats weren't the same and the output wasn't the same. So that's my big concern, is that year three developments with Josh Allen. And to be honest, quarterbacks don't always develop in linear fashion. It's easy to say, hey, it's year two and he's always going to get better, but that's not always the case with quarterbacks. So that would be where my concern lies. I love what they did as far as John Brown, Cole Beasley, building some weapons around him. Would love to see them continue there, but it's still going to be, it's difficult to win unless your quarterback is playing top half of the league type of football, and Allen just hasn't been there yet.
It's interesting that you mentioned Trubisky, Steve, in that, as we may have talked about last year when we had you on, like in terms of like the basic stats, including games played, Trubisky year one to year two, a lot of us went, okay, like that's a goal. And the right. Bears won their division and went to the playoffs. Like, that's a goal. And it, just in some form, kind of happened, but then you said the rest of it with Trubisky this year, and so we will want to avoid those comparisons this offseason as opposed to last offseason. Before we run out of time here, last couple minutes, Joe Burrow. I am gullible. You don't know me, but I am. And so the week of the Super Bowl, I was starting to buy into the idea that the Bengals might not pick him. Every guest and every conversation I've had since, I basically get, come on, of course they will. Is that a lock to you that they take him, and how do you expect him to do?
The Bengals are an interesting organization where I think it would be a little premature to call anything a lock. I also think it makes sense, you know, even if you know you're going to take Joe Burrow, it makes sense to maybe just drum up interest just in case. You know, if a team sent you their next 15 first-round picks, you'd probably trade it for Joe Burrow. You just never know. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to do that. I do think ultimately they land on Joe Burrow. I love what he did last year in college. I do have some concerns about what he did in 2018, where he was good, not great. You know, he did some nice things, but it just wasn't the best college season of all time, which we basically just saw. So there are some reservations about, you know, how much is that the system and the playmakers, but he excelled in absolutely every area last year. Clean pocket, outside the pocket, under pressure, against the blitz. He did it all. He did it in an NFL system. He also did it with NFL-level talent, which is another story there. But, yeah, I think he's got a chance to have a lot of success. You know, quarterback play and projection is always – it's a wide range of outcomes, but Burrow showed all of the skills necessary to have success at the next level. And like any other young quarterback, it's all about how you build around him and how you – you build around his skill set, which obviously LSU did a fantastic job of doing that last year.
Right. Steve, thanks so much for your time on a Friday here. You gave us 20 minutes. I always like it when Joe tells us that you're on the schedule. So I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, at PFF_Steve. Former pitcher. I appreciate him taking the questions, too, about baseball. And he's like, how I kind of agree with him. I mean, I played a little bit growing up, but never, like, of course, professionally like he did. And just like the way baseball players react to things like this, I like his perspective on it. Really good. Next, Evan Abrams from the Action Network. Can I bet Daytona? Do I want to? Maybe some XFL? What about the Astros at 96 wins? We'll see what we can get to. I'll stop talking now. Evan Abrams. After sports, Bulldog is off today. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
As Evan Abrams gets lined up here, one way to look at Brady and the Patriots, like, this is not something said to blame Brady, because you can't really do that. I mean, it's his life and his career, and he's still, like, here's Steve Palazzolo saying he'd still be the best quarterback in the division, whatever it actually would amount to. Great players in sports, you see them decline, and they get compared with their former selves more than they get compared with the rest of the league, you know? Jordan or somebody who retires, they're still better than most players, but they're just not like their greatest self. It's almost like Brady is forcing the Patriots' hand by not retiring. Like, who starts at quarterback at 43? So it's like they're each trying to wait each other out a little bit. I'm just going to keep playing. So you're going to have to cut me. You're going to have to move on, because I'm not willing to do it. And maybe somebody over there is thinking, could you just be like sort of a normal player and retire at 38 or 39? Of course, they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. So, I mean, can you just end this? Would you just do that? And he's just, no, I want to keep playing. So you're going to have to be the bad guy. More on this subject, well, all the time until it gets settled. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off. Happy Friday. On the West Her Hotline right now, our friend from the Action Network, Evan Abrams, on Twitter, at Evan H. Abrams. As you know, Evan, I heard a little bit of your show this week. Loved it. And I like this week because there are options. Like, we're not in our traditional football routine here. We've got golf. We've got college basketball, hockey if you want it. And also the Daytona 500. And I have been asked to ask you, by Bulldog, who is absent, whether we should want to bet the Daytona 500. What do you say?
Okay, so first of all, the answer is always yes. And but the reason it's always yes when it comes to Daytona 500 is there's tons of value, and it's a great race on a Sunday, and now you have XFL, so I was going to say you don't have football. But honestly, it's a great race. There's lots of matchups, top fives, top tens, top 20s. I mean, listen, it's a fun time out there, so I'm all aboard.
So what's the strategy here? I mean, you've got favorites and underdogs, like everything. There are head-to-head pairings, right? You know, who will finish Who will finish above the other guy? What's the way to go?
Well, so if you're going to bet versus DFS, you can play NASCAR DFS, which is also an option here. I mean, the way I do it is this. So we have a bunch of handicappers here at the Action Network, and what they've done is they've compiled their aggregate rankings. So I'm taking a look at those. I'm taking a look at the futures market, and I'm trying to find some value here. Now, one bet I made a while ago, and I wouldn't recommend it at this price. I have Ross Chastain, and a bunch of us here at the Action Network took him at 220-1. Right now, he's sitting there at 60-1 after making a car change. So that's one thing I am absolutely rooting for. But other drivers I'm making bets on, Eric Almirola, Ricky Stenhouse, Kurt Busch. So there's some good value here, and they're ranked in our top 10, and you're getting, you know, between 20 and 25-1 on these guys.
So how did you guys decide to bet this guy that I don't know who he is at 220-1? What about him was interesting, and maybe you even anticipated something like what happened happening, so his odds came way down. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's, part of our experts who look at this stuff are looking at cars and how much practice they have in certain cars and people flipping and this and that. Those are the real, you know, metrics and things like that, especially that early. We made this, looking at my ticket right now, we made this bet February 8th. We made this bet January 9th. So, you know, a long time ago when, you know, there's practices and qualifying and all these different races leading up to this big one on Sunday. So lots of different strategy that goes into it. But, you know, the average bettor is going to walk into Sunday's race and want a driver or two, right? And that's the way they're going to bet the race. So I think when I'm looking at it, those are the three guys that see some value. Now, the number one guy across the board is Joey Logano. He's number one across all three of our rankings. And he's the aggregate number one. And he's not even the favorite. You can get him at about 10 or 11-1. So if you want a guy, you know, a top five or want to take a favorite, Logano is number one right now for us.
Evan, do you have anything on how predictive racing is versus other sports?
I mean, when you go from race to race, usually, now listen, the outlier here is always the Jimmy Johnsons. And when you have guys like this that are winning cups year after year after year, but it really depends on the sport. I mean, in terms of specifics, I'd say it's not as aggregate as other ones, but it's a tough one, especially when you have a lot of different. It also depends on how many racers are in the race, right? Some are much smaller, some are much bigger.
Evan Abrams from the Action Network. He'll join us Fridays at this time, usually as we go into the spring, and that's really cool because I love talking about all this stuff. One more thing I was looking at today and eager to ask you about, Evan, is baseball futures, and particularly the Astros at 96 wins. So, I don't know, all bets are not off in this, literally, but, I mean, it seems like the Astros, anything could happen almost. I mean, is it not conceivable that Altuve and Bregman and that team with Greinke for a full season, that they're just like still the Astros, even without the garbage cans, and they overcome it? And isn't it also conceivable that Altuve and other guys maybe steeply decline? What's the move?
Yeah, I mean, you're correct on all accounts, but I think there's three ways of looking at it. Their division as a whole is stronger than it was last year. So when you look at the teams that they're going to have to play and the frequency of you playing those division teams, I think that's really one way of looking at it. The second is I think you have to put into a fact here that they did lose Gerrit Cole. I think it's lost in the offseason, but it is a starter out of the rotation and a starter with so many good metrics, it's ridiculous. So I think that is a loss and something you have to notice. And again, I think it's the whole – listen, it's going to be tough for them every time they go on the road, right? We know that. And we know that's built into the win total. And our projections look at it about 94, 95 wins. And right now they're set at about 96, 96 and a half. They're not the Yankees. They're not the Dodgers. But I would probably bet the under on them. You know, it's probably going to be 2-3 wins either way, so it's a real close one. But if you're going to go with it, and here's the other thing. There's about 28 to 30 extra wins out there when you look at all 30 baseball teams in terms of win totals. Like, the wins don't add up to the actual wins at the end of the season that are available. So every win total out there is juiced up a tiny bit.
Okay.
So, you know, most of these do go under. So if you're going to bet an over, you better be sure that you like that over, because most of the time these do go under and there's extra wins out there. So you're paying extra juice.
How about, I'm looking at, I don't know if this is the lowest, but Detroit is 57.5. I don't have them ranked here, Evan. A couple of years ago, the Miami Marlins were talked about as like, this is going to be one of the all-time worst teams, and whatever the total was, it might have been 52 or some, maybe higher than that. Anyway, it was like interesting to think about what to do. I mean, is it possible that the hype, so to speak, is like still not enough to push that number low enough? What about the teams at the bottom, if you've given this any thought, like the Tigers, or if there's anyone lower? 57 wins is 105 losses.
Yeah, the Tigers right now at DraftKings are sitting at 57.5. They're not the lowest. The Orioles sitting there at 56.5. And if I'm going through all of them right now, I believe the Orioles would be the lowest team.
Okay.
Listen, the way I tend to look at this, and this is a bit of a blanketed statement, but I like to go under on the bigger totals, and I tend to look over on the lower totals. It's just the way the market's built. If a person's going to walk into a sports book in Vegas and say to themselves, okay, I want to bet the over on a team, they're going to want to bet the over 100, 101, 101.5 on the Yankees versus sitting there and being interested in taking anything on the Orioles unless they have a relationship there. So, I mean, I'm just more willing to look at those teams at the bottom of the basement. If I like a certain team here or there, maybe take the over. Now, when you look at the AL East as a whole, it's interesting versus the AL Central, right? When you look at some of the teams and what they've done. So if you're looking at the Tigers specifically, I'd probably stay away. When you look at the Orioles, maybe I go over. The team I like in that division is kind of Toronto, because I like the unders on the Red Sox, Yankees, and Rays. So I think Toronto could potentially take a minor jump, but those overs are tough.
Toronto, I have it 74.5. If you get the big jump, so to speak, from Guerrero, and with Ryu there, if that works out, there's always an argument for either side of any of these teams, but Bichette and Biggio were good already. Like, I wonder where the rest of it lies. Maybe, is Justin Smoke still there, do you know? Like, because he might be a bounce-back candidate. I don't know. I'm going to think about this, Toronto.
Yeah. The way I look at it, though, is the people around them, the teams around them, and the talent gone from the division.
Yep,
The Yankees are the Yankees. So, I mean, you're going to expect what you're going to expect. But the Rays, I think, have a bit high expectations. And Boston, on the other hand, just lost a ton of pieces, and you still get to play the Orioles. So, especially if you look at the last 5 or 6 years for Toronto, they hit a peak, and they've really been falling when it comes to wins year after year after year. Last year winning, I believe, about 67. I don't think you're still going south in 2020 there. So I think you're going to get pretty close to that number.
I like the idea of San Francisco under. Do you have a thought on that? 69.5 on my list.
Yeah, I'd probably lean under there as well, just because I think the division also got a little harder, right? When you look at the Padres and you look especially at the Dodgers, right? The Dodgers just loaded up, and you're going to see a lot of the Giants and the rivalry there. So I would probably lean under in San Francisco. And I've done it the last few years. Listen, without a good offense and a solid run-scoring machine there, you're relying way too much on the pitching, and it's just not there this season.
Lastly, Evan, NBA All-Star Weekend, do you have a favorite player too?
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at the three-point contest, I think it's Davis Bertans. At plus 450, I really like his style, the way he's going towards this event, and I think there's really interesting value there. I did like Lillard. He backed out, but Bertans is kind of my man. I'm really going to look at that guy.
I've got plus 550.
Yeah, there you go. I like it. I think him and Devontae Graham are interesting three-point shooters going. This one last year, we nailed Joe Harris. So Devontae Graham and Davis Bertans are the two guys I'm going to look at.
All right. I'm going to think a lot about Davis Bertans right now. Evan, thanks as always. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, have fun. Thank you.
You got it. Evan H. Abrams on Twitter, Action Network. Davis Bertans. He's got the line over the A in Davis and over the A in Bertans. Joe, who is Davis Bertans? I didn't want to ask Evan this. I want to ask you this.
Not a clue.
Off the air. I'm just asking you off the air right now. Who is Davis Bertans?
Davis Bertans. I don't have.
Let's guess teams. Don't look yet. Are you already doing it? Look away.
I typed it in, but I didn't hit enter yet.
You're guessing Magic? Is that your guess?
I'm going to guess the Magic. Yeah.
I'm not going to guess the Magic because you did.
Why was that going to be your guess? The Orlando Magic?
I might not have even thought of them as a team. So no, probably not.
That's why I picked them, because I wouldn't normally think of them as a team. So
yeah,
random guy in the All-Star events, sure, the Magic.
I'm taking out the top teams because I'm pretty sure I'd know who he was if he were on the Lakers or something.
He's not on the Clippers or anything.
The Clippers, even the Warriors, I think I would know. Raptors.
I don't know anybody who's on the Warriors right now.
I will say, this is going to be hard, Hornets. Is that still a team?
Hornets is a team. He's on the Wizards.
Oh, I win.
I think you win just because of geographical proximity.
Could have said Wizards. Didn't think of them.
They're in that realm.
They are in that realm.
They're those,
absolutely.
They're those NBA teams you just never think about.
Yeah, that's right. I would have to say that that's true of myself. I just never think about them. Zach Bogosian waved by the Sabres. What about it? We'll do that after this. We want to talk fantasy, too. Joe and I always like to do that when it's he and I. So if you've got a good fantasy question, I don't know really what it might be about. For me, I'm doing some baseball prep for a few leagues and then also some dynasty football, but there's not a lot to do. Joe and I will probably talk about that a little bit next hour because, I don't know, one thing we're talking about maybe is, so we're in one league together, and I pulled back one trade offer because I just felt like, it's February. Give these guys a break. I won this league. I don't want to be like super annoying about it. You got to give them a little bit of space. So, and last year I did win, so I can't say it wasn't a good strategy, but I was constantly churning. I made trades like every 2 or 3 weeks in the offseason in that league just to slowly climb up. I think that's good to do, but trading is about relationships. So make sure you think about that. Make sure you remember that you're dealing with another person, and if they're not your best friend or something, then they may not always want to hear from you all the time or something. Like, they may not want to be quite as obsessed with the league as I might be, or even Joe. That said, Joe was telling me about a trade offer he got, and I liked hearing about it. I like hearing that my league is alive in the offseason at the same time. Davis Bertans. Hey, the Woodhouse Day Spa in Williamsville. Yes, it is Valentine's Day today, so I can't exactly encourage you to buy a gift card for Valentine's Day, but you actually still can. You're not going to be able to get there today, I think. But you can do this from home. If you go to buffalo.woodhousespas.com. Guys, like, if you forgot or something, or just don't have a good idea for Valentine's Day, here, freebie. Buffalo.woodhousespas.com, free advice anyway. You can print out a gift card from their website right at home, and then, you know, you're back. Order is restored. Buffalo.woodhousespas.com. To book an appointment, maybe you've just given someone sitting beside you in the car a gift card from the Woodhouse. 458-5700, make the call and book massages, facials, pedicures, four-handed massages, if you're into that. I loved it. The duet massage, all kinds of different options for you. The Woodhouse Day Spa, right across from Williamsville South High School on Main Street. 458-5700 for the Woodhouse.
Because I know all the inside information about why it happened, the very logical process we went through, and the reasons it happened. So I don't have any second thoughts about it. It bothers me that people have, negative feelings about the way we handled it. But I thought we handled it as best we could under the circumstance.
Tom Golisano last night at the arena at a press conference where he's asked about Drury and Briere leaving. I'm sure he had to enjoy that part of his night. I did not go last night. I never thought about it. As I was listening to the ceremony on my drive home, I felt a little bit bad about it. At least so that I could have been in there to sense what it felt like. Because, like, everybody, not the players necessarily, but everybody is sort of, it's sort of complicated. I'm not a sports fan who cheers for owners, like, ever. I mean, owners don't need my applause. They run the show. Like, I don't know. I don't go to games for owners. Neither do you, right? So I can't think of a time when I was, like, impressed with a sports owner being at a game, and last night you had past and present and Bettman. And, like, everything is complicated right now. Fans are just dying here over the fact that this team cannot figure out how to be even relevant with Eichel on it, who's killing the league. And, like, we've been over it a million times. I would have liked being in there for sort of getting a sense of what it felt like when everybody was introduced. Listening, I was listening for noise in the background, and only Bettman did I really hear anything. And that's just automatic. I mean, Bettman is the one who kept the Sabres here, really, as much as anybody else. You know, like, he had to want that, or at least help with that, for it to have happened, I think. I mean, I guess that's debatable, but that's how I look at it. So, I mean, these are kind of sad times for them. And it's interesting that, like, that was all there last night. Briere and Campbell and Dumont and some of those other players from that team, not most of them, but some of those players were there last night, and you want to celebrate that. I think it is a real shame that there were no reunion nights 2 and 3 years ago about those teams, when it just seems like obvious that there would have been 10-year reunion in what was also a miserable losing season for two of the most popular teams in the history of the city. But, like, nothing was even mentioned. Like, it just was just, you know, that ball was dropped, I guess. I mean, maybe somebody would tell me, no, there was actually this good reason for it. I don't know. Like, it's not a happy thing right now for me. And maybe last night would have helped if I had been there. Maybe last night would have been, oh, cool, Brian Campbell. I really liked Brian Campbell. So many of those guys, and even in Sabres years before Pegula and before Golisano. Of course, not needless to say, like Hasek and Pekka and Danny Gare, even maybe. I don't know. Like, there's just, like, LaFontaine twice. This just crushing history when it comes to its alumni. It's like most revered players. And, you know, it gets reconciled. Dominic Hasek comes back and everybody's happy about that, right? A lot of stuff happened when he was here. Not everything to him. Some things by him. But, you know, like, he's the best player in the league, and then he quits the Sabres. I don't want to play for them anymore. Like, that's, like, a constant almost in their history. And so, necessarily, celebrations of their alumni are complicated because they're often, like, LaFontaine is not going to be at any of these ever. Like, that's just not going to happen ever again because of the 5 minutes when he worked in the front office that somehow went sideways, like, nobody knows. So I don't know. I mean, I would have wanted to feel it, you know, maybe if it was kind of ugly or uncomfortable, I would have wanted to leave. And you don't want to go to a game and leave before it starts. Didn't get to Bogosian here. I've said it like 3 times, and, you know, it's something. We'll talk about this as we get in the next hour. A lot of emotion right now with the Sabres. I am, like, feeling it right now. I'm sort of taken by it. Like, I'm just like, wow, I'm really feeling something right now talking about this. 803-0550 is the number. I haven't taken any calls today, but we've got the rest of the show open. Rachel's was here today. Very excited. Rachel's was here as we had our friends from Dunn Tire, Rob Clark, who came on the show at the beginning, and 6 or 7 of us were sitting together for lunch, and there was Rachel's, and it's like one of the guys said, Alan, our program director, is like, this has become such a nice, regular thing, Rachel's. And I think for a lot of people in Western New York, it has also become like a really cool habit, a routine, to go to Rachel's for lunch. 7 area locations, opening in Rochester now. and you've got South Towns, you've got the beautiful big open facility in Sheridan, ones by the Galleria, Elmwood in Chippewa. Rachel's is really a staple, and I'm excited about that. I think it's great. It tastes good. It feels good. Mediterranean diet from Rachel's. You can't go wrong. It's fresh, and it's good for you. And if you ever want catering, Rachel's is a great option, too. They've done a couple parties for me now, and they do a beautiful job. So I love my Rachel's. You'll love your Rachel's, too. Rachel's Mediterranean Grill, official partner of the Bills and Sabres.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.